Shri-jata-pada-kamalam, Sri-gurum Vaishnavamsa, Sri-rupam Sagrajatam, Sahagana-raghunatam, Vitamstam sajivam, Sadvaitam sabhadhutam, Purjana-sahitam, Krishna-chaitanya-devam, Sri-radha Krishna-padam, Sahagana-ladita, Sri Vishakhanvitamsa. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho, Dina Bandho Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostate. Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Rishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami. Vansha kolpitarubhyascha kripa sindhobhyevacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Parastasma tu bhavonyo vyakto vyaktat sanatam. I think there was another editorial. You don't have a first edition, do you?
Yeah.
In this section of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has explained the manifest and unmanifest natures. Okay. Yeah, there's a small change there. Parastasma tu bhavonyo vyakto vyaktat sanatana. Krishna has explained the manifest nature and the unmanifest nature. The manifest nature comes when, Govinda? I'm putting you on the spot. I got to give you better clues than that. Manifest nature is during Brahma's day. During the day of Brahma, all the living entities come out. They're all manifested. And during the night, they're unmanifest. When Brahma's day is manifest, then avyakta vyaktaya sarva prabhavantiya agame. During the day of Brahma, they all come out from the unmanifest state. Avyakta means from the unmanifest, vyaktaya, they become manifest. Sarve, all the living beings. Prabhavanti, they all come into being. Aharagame, during the day. And ratriagame praliyante, tatraiva vyaktasangake. And at night, they're all annihilated, avyaktasangake. And that's the unmanifested state. Avyakta dini bhutani vyakta madhyani bhavati. We discussed that yesterday. A little different. All of us, we're unmanifest, then we're born, we're manifest, then we die, we're unmanifest. So we have that cycle of our own. Then comes the next bigger cycle, the days and nights of Brahma. During the day, everyone's manifest. During the night, everyone's unmanifest. Not destroyed, but merged into the body of Lord Vishnu. Then, I mentioned this yesterday. Forgive me for being preoccupied with editorial things. But, let's see. I'll point out something. I pointed it out yesterday, but here it is. This is text 18. Avyaktad vyaktiya sarva. When Brahma's day is manifest, this multitude of living entities comes into being, and at the arrival of Brahma's night, they are all annihilated. Text 19. Again and again the day comes, and the host of beings is in action, and again the night falls, O Partha, and they are helplessly dissolved. That verse really says the same thing.
And so you see, they both say dissolved?
Yeah, they're annihilated. But really what it was is that text 18 was left out in the original edition. And so somebody filled it in with the text of text 19. And they already had a text 19. So you have two versions of text 19 and no version of text 18. So text 18 said, at the beginning, and they put the purport to text 19 as the purport to text 18. Yeah, so 19 doesn't have a purport, 18 does, but in the manuscript, that's the purport to text 19. And 18, I guess, had a translation and 19 didn't. And so they supplied a translation for 19, but it's just a different one. They looked and said, 19 doesn't have a translation. So they filled it in. But actually the one that they had for 18 was the translation, and 18 hadn't been translated. So they had nothing for 18, in fact, and two for 19. Or that is, the one they had for 18 and 19 were both for 19. 18 was, at the beginning of Brahma's day, all living entities become manifest from the unmanifest state. And thereafter, when the night falls, they're merged into that unmanifest again. Not so different, but it is different. So in any case, it's a small thing. But then there's a manifest and unmanifest. Day of Brahma's manifest, night of Brahma, unmanifest. Then, reading from the first edition, yet there's another nature which is eternal and transcendental to this manifested and unmanifested matter. It is supreme, and it is never annihilated. When all in this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. The change is really small. Yet there's another unmanifest nature. Here it says there's another nature. There's another unmanifest nature. Parastasma tu bhava anya. Tu bhava anya. Anya means another. There's another unmanifest nature. I've already told you about unmanifest nature during the night of Brahma. But there's another one. There's another unmanifest nature. And then the rest is the same. Nobody's going to stay in the material world because another was left out. But it's there in the text. So there's another unmanifest nature.
Much better one.
A much better one. Whichever edition you read, it's a much better nature. Parastasmat tu bhava anya. There's another beyond that, transcendental to that, manifest and unmanifest. There's another unmanifest nature. Vyakto vyaktat, beyond the manifest and unmanifest, sanatana. That's the point. Beyond all the quibblings of the material world. Beyond all the manifested, we have our big issues in the material world, but our real story is that what is that? Bhavambhavega. We were discussing last night that in the 11th chapter, the universal form is described, and the living entities are just like waves rushing into the universal, into the blazing mouths of the universal form. They're like moths dashing into his mouths, where there's waves upon waves of living entities just rushing to destruction in the universal form. That's our actual situation. But meanwhile, we're making a permanent settlement for ourselves. Here, we're chalking out our careers. We're becoming established. But what established is there? We're just like establishing our place in the waves that are all washing toward destruction. That's our situation. And we create, and we're created and destroyed again and again. If it's not too culturally gauche or inappropriate. By the way, this thing is here because it's embarrassing to be recording myself. I'm sorry, but somebody wants me to do that. According to my mother, who's an authority on the subject, my favorite nursery rhyme was the Itsy Bitsy Spider. Are you all, do you all familiar with the Itsy Bitsy Spider? You are, good. Okay, this is a well-educated audience.
Is that says a lot about you?
I don't know.
Should we all say it together?
Afterlife is wasted.
Spider crawled up the water spout. Down came the rain and washed the spider out. Out came the sun and dried up all the rain. And the itsy bitsy spider crawled up the spout again.
Carol King.
He liked it.
He says, finally, something I can understand. And not so bad after all.
Glad you came to this class.
Now he's interested.
You heard it first here.
That's right. And you'll never guess what they talked about in the class.
Appropriate, right? That's, you know, we all climb up and then we get washed out, and then we climb up and we get washed out. And that's what Krishna's saying. We're trying to climb up and we're all getting washed out again, and then we do it again. Bhutva, bhutva, praliyate. We create, we destroy it again. Build up and get smashed again. Mm-hmm. What is it? Puna puna sharvit to charvit. Chew the chew again.
Mm. When so you drive around here, you see abandoned houses.
Sorry?
You see abandoned houses.
Uh-huh.
So I think about here we are, and in 100 years, this may be one too.
Yeah, an abandoned house.
You know, all the endeavor that you to put it in and to maintain it. And
one right down the road, by about 200 yards from on the left side. Yeah.
Going back to when I was a kid, you know, when you start, when you pass 60, you keep going back to when you were 5 or 10. I lived across the street from a little meadow, and my friends and I built a little fort in the meadow out of, you know, old leftover pieces of wood and so on. And it became quite a thing. I mean, it was like, you know, 5 feet tall or something, and maybe no less, it was probably about 4 feet tall. A kid could stand up inside of it, and it had a roof, and you could stand on the roof and you could survey the territory, and you could sit there in the rain and, you know, only get drizzled on a little bit. And it was really exciting. You know, we were always thinking about something else that we could do to, you know, get another piece of something and do another something. And just a fantastic thing. And one morning I came out and the whole thing had been smashed. Mm. I think it was the Kraft brothers up the street. Envious lot. But anyway, there it was, you know, just totally reduced to just an empty spot, some rubble there. And we'd worked so hard, and, you know, we were like always thinking what to do and improve it. And it just got finished. So the that's the way it is in the material world. You build something up, and it's all destined to be smashed. Whatever we build up with so much trouble, even finally smashed by the material nature. And still we're going through so much trouble to do it, to build it, to have it, to increase it. And what are we doing? It's all going to be unmanifest. So Krishna's directing us to that place which is beyond this material world, Sanatana. Prabhupada points out the living entities are Sanatana. The spiritual, the Lord is Sanatana. And the living entities are Sanatana. And the relationship between the living entities and the Lord is Sanatana. The activities are Sanatana Dharma, eternal activities. Well, that's the place where Krishna's, to which Krishna is directing us. Yasa sarveshu bhuteshu nasyatsu nasya. Nasya means finished. Pranashuti, my devotee, not nepakta pranashuti, my devotee is never finished. So, nasyatsu, in the destruction of everything. Yasa sarveshu bhuteshu. When everything here is finished, nashyatsu navi nashyati. That part's never annihilated. That part's never annihilated. That part stays. Should we read the next verse? Avyaktokshareet yuktas tamahu paramam gatim yam prapya nanivartante tadhama panamamama. That which the Vedantists describe as unmanifest and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination, that place from which, having attained it, one never returns, that is my supreme abode. The supreme abode of the personality of Godhead, Krishna, is described in the Brahma Sangita as Chintamani Dhamma, a place where all desires are fulfilled. The supreme abode of Lord Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan, is full of palaces made of touchstone. There are also trees called desire trees that supply any type of eatable upon demand. And there are cows, known as Surabhi cows, which supply a limitless supply of milk. In this abode, the Lord is served by hundreds of thousands of goddesses of fortune, Lakshmis. And he is called Govinda, the primal Lord and the cause of all causes. The Lord is accustomed to blow his flute, venum quanvantam. His transcendental form is the most attractive in all the worlds. His eyes are like lotus petals, and the color of his body is like the color of clouds. He's so attractive that his beauty excels that of thousands of cupids. He wears saffron cloth, a garland around his neck, and a peacock feather in his hair. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna gives only a small hint of his personal abode, Goloka Vrindavan, which is the supermost planet in the spiritual kingdom. A vivid description is given in the Brahma Sangita. Vedic literature, Katha Upanishad, state that there's nothing superior to the abode of the Supreme Godhead, and that that abode is the ultimate destination. Purushan na param kinchit sakastha paramagatihi. When one attains to it, he never returns to the material world. Krishna's supreme abode and Krishna himself are non-different being of the same quality. On this earth, Vrindavan, 90 miles southeast of Delhi, is a replica of that supreme Goloka Vrindavan, located in the spiritual sky. When Krishna descended on this earth, he sported on that particular tract of land known as Vrindavan, comprising about 84 square miles in the district of Mathura, India. Just thinking of this purport and as a non-devotee would read it, a person unfamiliar with our literature, teachings of Krishna consciousness. We're familiar with this stuff, you know. Every day we're chanting Chintamani, Purpakara, Sadamasu, or at least we chant Venam Kanbanta. But for a non-devotee, this is such astonishing information. You know, maybe we know about God as a cloud by day and a fire by night. Or the, you know, so many images come to mind of a sort of vague nature or else the old man image. And really no one knows what the kingdom of God is like. There's the, you know, the tracks with the
Jehovah's Witnesses know God is over there and way over there and everyone's enjoying sense.
Yeah, it's kind of like suburbia. You see the those tracks and there's a little picket fence and a little cottage behind it and the little doggy is there. Woof, woof. And everybody's just living forever in suburbia. Having been, I guess, reconstituted from whatever it is. Don't want to, you know, parody other people's pictures too much. But certainly in the Bible, no such picture is given that you're going to have your house and your lawn and your everything but your mortgage payments. And
God takes care of us.
God takes care of your mortgage. That's heaven.
Well, the ground is paved with gold, so.
Yeah, something. But in the Brahma Sangita or in Srimad Bhagavatam, we get such information. And generally, the God's in heaven and you go there, but what do you do? There's no indication what kind of relationship is there. People, again, the picture, you know, people play harps all day or something. Wear togas and play harps. So such attractive information is here. First about God's form, Krishna's form, his garland, his flute, his lotus petal eyes, his yellow cloth, peacock feather. Such a revolutionary picture, certainly, and such an attractive picture. Krishna is so beautiful by his attractive features. And it's something one can think about also. One can meditate on this form of Krishna. One can think of Krishna's lotus feet, lotus eyes. The gopis, the Brajvasis, they're seeing lotuses everywhere. Krishna's lotus feet, Krishna's lotus eyes, Krishna's lotus navel, Krishna's lotus everything. Behold, and Krishna's lotus footprints on the ground of Vrindavan. So they're everywhere seeing lotuses. They're seeing Krishna everywhere. And as the most attractive, loving person, that image is there. And the cows are there. It's the planet of the cows. Full of cows, Goloka Vrindavan. And Krishna is playing as a cowherd boy. They're not sitting on a throne and not throwing thunderbolts or whatever it is. But he's enjoying these wonderful activities as a cowherd boy. And as Prabhupada says, he's only giving a hint here of Krishna's nature. Or even Bhagavad Gita, just still less of a hint. Prabhupada is actually opening it up at least a little bit here. But Krishna's being a little introductory. Avyakta akshara ityuktas. What is that spiritual world? Ukta, it's said, and Prabhupada opens it up a little bit following the acharyas. Said by whom? Ukta, it's said. Said by whom? Prabhupada said the Vedantists. What do the Vedantists say? Avyakta and akshara. It's unmanifest and it's infallible. Or akshara. Kshara means diminishing or being finished, dwindling down to nothing. Or kshara means fallible. So akshara means infallible. That's the picture from Vedantists. That place which is unmanifest, that place which is infallible. The Vedantists also are not giving such a detailed picture. Giving a vague idea. You know, the Christians, maybe there's something up in the clouds, and the Vedantists, it's something unmanifest. It's something infallible. They're not giving so much information. Philosophically, they are. It's not this, it's that. It's not like this nature, it's like that nature. Avyaktokshara ityuktas. That much they say. Tam ahu paramam gatim. And it's also said to be paramam gatim, the supreme destination. That's the place where you want to go. But they don't tell you so much. Therefore, people are thinking that when you go to that impersonal destination, you merge with this, that. There's not such a clear picture. So Krishna says, yam prapya na nivartante, that place from which one never returns, tad dhamma paramamma, that unmanifest, infallible destination, that's my place. That's my abode, my dhamma, tad dhamma, paramamma. It's the supreme destination, that's where I live. Person. Krishna is a person, and he says, this is my world, tad dhamma paramamma. Yes. Tadhama paramamma. And then Prabhupada's opening it up. Let's see. There's also something up there. Forgive me. I have to keep up with the people who are obsessed by being obsessed. Yeah. How about that? You get a bonus quotation in the second edition. Purusham na param kichit sakashta paramagati. The Vedic literature says there's nothing superior to that abode of the Supreme Godhead, and that abode is the ultimate destination. Prabhupada's quoting from Kati Purusha. Not making these things up. Krishna's supreme abode and Krishna himself are non-different, being of the same quality. That much also. There's so many wonderful things that are there about Krishna and Krishna's abode in every line. In every line. This is revolutionary information. That there's God, that there's his place, and that they're non-different because they're of the same quality, same spiritual quality. These things are there. And this is the introductory. This is already ultra-revolutionary. it's unique theological information. And this is the introductory part, Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada said ABC of spiritual knowledge. Then we go on to Srimad Bhagavatam and we find out what's going on there. This is as far as Krishna goes. He doesn't say the gopis are there, Nanda Maharaj, cowherd boys, Sudam, Sridam, all these different relationships, pastimes, rasa dances. None of that is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. That's all graduate material. Not even hinted at, really, in Bhagavad Gita. The only hint is that I live there and my abode is there and you can come. And you'll never come back. Nani vartante tadtam apanamamama. Then in Srimad Bhagavatam we find so much more. How Yashoda Mai is serving Krishna, how Nanda Maharaj is serving Krishna. That also, people don't know. This, what is the kingdom of God? What goes on there? Service goes on there. This is the defect of the picture, you know, where I have my little cottage and the picket fence and the dog. It means I'm still the enjoyer. It's still all about me. God's somewhere, but activity in relationship to God is not made central.
He's up there paying the mortgage.
He's up there paying the mortgage. But in the Bhagavad Gita, in Bhagavatam, what's going on there? Everyone's serving. Everyone's serving Krishna. And what is that service? It's not just one kind of flavor, but so many different kinds of flavors. So many different kinds of flavors. Someone serving as a friend. That service is, you know, I thought about how could someone could serve God as a friend.
Mm-hmm. Or a lover.
Or a lover. Or as a parent. These things are very confidential and very wonderful also. That our business is that we're servants of God. But what that service is such a relishable thing. It's more relishable than trying to be the master in the material world. That's our project in the material world, to try to be the master. While we're all being washed away by the waves of the material energy, while we're all rushing into the blazing mouths of the universal form, meanwhile, we have a project to try to become masters of all we survey.
I would rather reign in hell than serve.
Yeah, John Milton in Paradise Lost has this wonderful line that he puts into the mouth of Satan. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. Really, the essence of the materialistic quality of mentality. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. At least here I can be the boss. It may be hell, but I'm the boss.
It's my hell.
It's my hell. And there, it's his.
That's right.
And I have to be a servant. Here I get to be the master. That's the essence of the problem. Mm. That we'd rather be the enjoyers, the masters, here in hell, than to be servants of Krishna in the spiritual world. And part of the problem is that we have a poor information. You know, what am I going to do there? Just, you know, bang, servant. I'm going to bang license plates. What am I going to do in the spiritual world? It's nothing particularly attractive that's described. You know what I mean? Either it's some in the Vedanta, something impersonal, something merging. Prabhupada has this comment in Srimad Bhagavatam in first canto that Shankaracharya taught the impersonalist philosophy in order to increase the unwanted population. Remember that comment? Mm. That he teaches the impersonal philosophy in order to increase the unwanted population. And I thought about that, you know, what does that mean? think about it. What does it mean that he wanted to increase the unwanted population? And so he taught Mayavad philosophy. As far as I can understand, Mayavad philosophy is so... so nothing. So theoretical. So abstract and impractical that even if one makes a show of pursuing it or makes an attempt to pursue it, you're not really going to be able to grab onto it. And therefore we go back into default mode, the material enjoyment. Material enjoyment means sex life, and sex life means unwanted population. That's as far as I... Someone may have a better understanding. But that was my thought on the matter. That from the impersonal, the more you... What is that? Not quite from the nursery rhyme department, but strawberry fields, nothing is real. And nothing to get hung about. Since nothing is real, since nothing is substantial, make your dream. Create your own reality. And so we're all busy creating our own reality. Any reality in the spiritual world is just abstract, impersonal, theoretical. So forget that part. Even the atheists, you know, forget that part. The atheists and the impersonalists are on par here. You know, forget that part. There's nothing really to grab onto. So we're back down to enjoy it while you can. But it's not enjoyable. It's frustrating. Bhutva, bhutva, purlita te. Climbing up the water spout and getting washed out again. So here Krishna's describing that supreme destination and inviting us, really. That's the point. That this chapter, attaining the supreme, means what? It means coming back to my abode, from which Krishna says one never returns, thereby providing a lot of opportunity for discussion. And the replica, I think that's another editorial change. Shall we look? And this one, I think, is not an editor's mistake kind of thing. I think this is editors being... Nope. This one's good. It's a replica. But someplace else, Prabhupada says a prototype. Maybe it's in the introduction. Yeah, it's in the introduction. Prabhupada says it's a Goloka Vrindavan. That Vrindavan in India is a prototype of Krishna's abode in the spiritual world. But that's backwards. The prototype is what comes first, and the replica is the copy. So what's here is not the prototype, it's the replica of what's in the spiritual world. Now, philosophically, there's no difference between the prototype and the replica. You can't say which one came first and which one came second. They're non-different. They're absolute. But what Prabhupada means to say is that this is a copy. This is a second version of what's there in the spiritual world. It's not good. Prashami does make that point, that there's really no difference except that one's there and this one's here. Mm. And he even says the one here is sweeter.
Right.
Because Krishna, to keep pace with the material picture, does things here that he doesn't do there. Mm. His pastimes of birth don't take place in the spiritual world. His babyhood pastimes don't take place in the spiritual world. They're manifest here in Goloka, in Vrindavan on earth, Mama Vrindavan. So Sanatana Goswami says it's even sweeter in this manifestation.
So
So even Krishna has his own time, place, and circumstance.
Demon killing only comes along.
Demon killing. Yeah, I think Rakshana Prabhu said he wanted to keep traveling with Krishna in the material world because then you get to do the bodyguard stuff here.
We've heard it enough many times.
But yeah, in the material world, in the spiritual world, there's some semblance of demons, some rumors of demons, but you don't get the real thing. Here you get the real thing. Krishna gets to sport by killing those demons. So the Bhava Vrindavan has particular attractions, not even found in the Goloka.
He tames the demons.
Hmm?
He tames the demons.
Yeah, he tames
them. In the Brihat Bhagavatamrita.
In the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. He's... why don't you tell about that? There's two places he talks about that. I think one is Krishna Lila Stava. And the other is Brihad Bhagavatamrita. I get confused between the diversions, but you remember the one from Brihad
Bhagavatamrita. He just rode him. He tamed him and made him a horse
That's where he's tying the saris of the gopis together also and making like a bridle for
maybe. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember that either.
I don't remember that.
That's maybe the one where it's Keshi demon in Krishna Lila Stava. But the same
idea. I think he, with Kaliya Serpent, that he does the same thing. He rides him.
Yes.
And I think that's when he takes the garments of the goat
okay,
and ties them together and makes like a bridle.
Makes a bridle. And
yeah.
Then they all get up and ride on Kaliya's head. So these things are just unpacked by the Goswamis, Krishna's different versions of his pastimes.
Mm.
And so many wonderful things are there in the spiritual world. And Prabhupada says the first one goes to the place where Krishna is appearing here on earth, and then get a little trained up.
Unless you're a pujari.
Unless you're a pujari.
A pujari goes directly back to Goloka.
Oh, because he's already trained up.
He's been trained up.
Is that what you've been telling your Swami?
I heard it from Janani Bhas.
No, Janani
Bhas is
from the
Jagat Pool.
Prabhupada said
in some place the perfect pujari, he doesn't need to go to Bhama Vrindavan. He already is qualified to.
But
Bhama
Vrindavan is such a. Even
if
they want, they can go.
Yeah, they want to go there. We want to go. But
we'll take what we can get, of course.
In the
spiritual world, are there baby pastimes of the living entity? Is that
No, because Najayate Miyate Va. There's no birth or death in the spiritual world.
Right.
So there's no babyhood pastimes. Although we read that the living entities can take different forms for Krishna's pleasure. That's also Brihad Bhagavatamrita. That the same living entity, it can sometimes appear as a sage, it can sometimes appear as a horse, it can, or a cow, or whatever bird, whatever might be nice for Krishna's pleasure. The living beings have they have that freedom to.
Flexibility.
Yeah, that's something also new from the Bhagavatamrita. And that they're members of the four ashrams there are Brahmins, there are Kshatriyas, what is that Brahmin Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra in the spiritual world? It's not that those who are in the mode of goodness are the Brahmins, those who are in passion, Kshatriyas. But for Krishna's pleasure, there are Brahmins, Sudama.
Yeah. Some kind of social. Madhu Mangal,
Gargamuni.
Sandipani Muni.
Different Brahmins and Kshatriyas are there. Krishna has his commander in chief of his army is there. And he's in Dwarka. Or Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, lots of Vaishyas.
Lots of Vaishyas.
Yeah, we always hear more about the Vaishya section. The cows and the gopis and the
Because the Brahmins are the minority in that village. Those who say, you know, the Brahmins, that in your next life maybe you'll be born a Brahmin. But if you're fortunate, in your next life you might be born a Vaishya and go back to Brahmin. That would be still better.
Brahmin society is more prominent in Chaitanya Lila, though, right?
Yes. Mahaprabhu comes as a Brahmin.
So, take birth as a Brahmin boy, and Mahaprabhu.
Yeah. These are all wonderful things. And there, Prabhupada says they're to attract us. Now we're attracted by the material energy falsely, thinking this is very nice. But if we hear in the association of devotees, then these topics open up and they become substantial for us. This picture, we want that, but this picture at the time of leaving this body, this picture of Krishna should be in the mind. Not some image of material enjoyment, some dream. But that while leaving this world, Ante Narayana Smriti, we can remember Krishna at the time of death. That becomes the success. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram. More?
Just a comment I was thinking in the 15th chapter. I think it's the Proportunata Bhasate Suryu. Prabhupada mentions that one should be captivated by this information.
Yeah,
right.
That's where it is, huh?
I think it's the Proportunata. One should be captivated by this information.
Nata Bhasate Suryu. Nashashanko. What verse is that?
15, 6.
One should be captivated by this information. He should desire to transfer himself to that eternal world and extricate himself from this false reflection of reality. This is the second place where Krishna says again, Yadgatva Nanivartante. I think two things are repeated twice in Bhagavad Gita. Manmana Bhagavan Bhakto Madhyaji Man Maskur. And Yadgatva Nanivartante Tatam.
And then there's the, I don't know if it's the same words, but 2:12 and then 18, chapter 66, don't worry. They're both, don't worry. I know different words, but. I believe it's Jiva Goswami. One of the Goswamis said, begins with don't worry, and then...
ends again with don't worry. And you can take it that for those who are worried that we may come back, Krishna says, no, yadgatva nani vartante, don't worry. You won't come back. Just go.
So the Vedic literature basically attracts and repels.
Yeah.
It describes the material world, how difficult it is, and then gives you the information of how attractive the spiritual world is.
Yeah.
So it's a pushing and pulling.
Durga, difficult to go from?
Durga, yeah.
Or?
Fortress. Durga means for it and break it up. Ga means going, and dura means with great difficulty.
Great difficulty.
Mm-hmm. So it's a fort, the prison is something that you can get out of with great difficulty. Durga. So the material world is the realm of Durga. You could also translate it colloquially, tough going. Dura means tough.
Mm-hmm.
The material world is tough going. Tough going, and you can't get out anyway, so it's tough to get out of. The material world is, therefore, it's deprecated again and again. Don't stay in this material world. Tamasi ma. Don't stay in the darkness of this material world. Jyotikam, go back to the spiritual world. That, again and again. That part is nice. This part is. And even if you think it's nice, it's going to be finished. That's Krishna's second argument. First thing is it's not nice. So he's reframing it for us. He's contextualizing it for us, that giving us a different way of looking at it. You're thinking it's so nice. You're thinking I'm going to get all this. The first thing is it's not nice. It's troublesome. Dukkhalaya. What is that? Anicchama sukhamloka. It's an unhappy place. And even if you think it's happy, then the next thing is you can't stay. You're going to get wiped out. Anicchama sukhamloka. Imam prapya prajasvam. Therefore, as long as you're here, engage in service to me.
A question about that word unmanifest. I mean, I understand the how it's being used, but I think the first time, I'm kind of remembering the first time I read the Bhagavad Gita, and how I'm thinking, how is something unmanifest? To me, that means it's not existing. So the spiritual world's not existing. It was hard for me to grab on to what that was saying. It sounded a little impersonal.
Yeah, well, that's what. You know, vyaktokshrit yuktastamahu paramangatam. They say, the Vedantists say that it's unmanifest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's infallible. And that is impersonal in the sense of unspecific.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where are we going? It's someplace unmanifest.
Right. Yeah, it's like...
You know, what is it? It's an infallible place. Yeah, okay. You know, there's not a whole lot of... It's like a glass wall. You can't grab onto it. So, therefore, Krishna's taking that. Essentially, Krishna's saying, I'm giving you something more than what you'll find in the Vedanta. The Vedantas, the Upanishads, are generally giving the idea of an absolute, a supreme, an ultimate, but not giving much personal information. Ishopanishad is giving something personal. But they're not giving so much of a personal picture. It's not like this material world. It's the opposite of this material world.
Mm-hmm.
That's temporary. This is eternal. Tamasi, don't stay in the darkness. Jyotirgama, go to the light. But what is that light? And people think, you know, it's a light. It's a great white light.
Mm-hmm.
But Krishna's, you know, piercing through that light, what do you get to? You get to my abode. And as the light sort of recedes to the side, you start to see desire trees, you start to see Surabhi cows, you start to see gopas and gopis, you start to see Krishna with his bluish complexion and his garland and his blue and his peacock feather, you start to see all that, which is so much more enchanting than an abstract, impersonal, unmanifest absolute, or a faceless God, an almighty power.
With no face.
Hmm?
With no face.
Yeah, faceless.
Sitting on the bench.
Into the lake of fire.
Yeah.
Is that also a term, apakritya? Is that
apakritya?
Is that like an
aprakrita?
Aprakrita. Yeah.
Yeah. Prakrita means
nature.
Well, yeah. Prakrita would mean manifest.
Manifest.
Yeah. Just like prakrita and aprakrita. So aprakrita means unmanifest, and prakrita means manifest.
Just means not manifest to our material
eyes.
Yeah, manifest doesn't mean
you can't see it with your material eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Up on that, you know, because
yeah, we get stuck on manifest means not existing.
Maybe that doesn't exist for something, you
know,
so.
Manifest
means
leela,
hidden.
Like that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because there's a Bulma leela, earth leela, and then what do we call
it? Then Prakrita. Yeah. Prakrita leela, what Krishna's here, it's
yeah, semantics, words.
Hmm?
The use of words and semantics. I mean, you being an editor, you know how, to be able to
Yeah, therefore, for Prabhupada's like explaining things again and again from different angles of vision so that we do get it.
Yeah.
You know, we get hung up on a word and we think, well, but then Prabhupada comes at it again and again, a little bit differently, a little different wording, so that we do get the right picture, what's what.
You know how it's stated that Krishna comes in all the different species of life?
Yeah.
But it's also stated that it's only the human form of life that one can get, you know, has the inclination towards self-realization.
That's true.
So what happens in the when Krishna comes as a
roach?
A roach. Or a winged stool, I mean.
This is an interesting question to which I don't know the answer.
Yeah, I don't know the answer either.
Yeah, but just an interesting. Maybe it helps him.
He says he helps.
Helps him to advance.
Yeah, somehow they.
And he helps them somehow.
They get some sort of benefit.
Otherwise, they never get up.
Maybe just even seeing his form.
Something.
You know, with it's.
Something.
Yeah. It's got to be good, whatever it is.
You had something about that too?
Asnata Sukriti.
Asnata?
Agyata
Sukriti.
Yes.
Agyata
Sukriti.
Some good fortune, unplanned from their side, good fortune. Getting a little late? Stop around here? Yeah, we should.
Yes, and cake and juice.
Okay. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.